Pallante coming home. Swing and a liner into left, a base hit. McCutchen trots in to score, and the Pirates lead 1-0. 1-1 in the bottom of the eighth. Reynolds at second, one out. Here's the pitch. Gonzalez chops it through the right side, base hit. Reynolds tags third. Ribello's waving him home. He scores! Pirates grab the lead in the eighth inning. Nick Gonzalez comes through. Bednar strike away from shaking hands. Here's the 0-2. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Bednar saves it. Nick Gonzalez with the game-winning hit in the eighth. And the Pirates have won 9 of 11. They're within a game of the Cardinals and currently in wild card position with their win tonight, 2-1 over St. Louis.
All right, well, they're not anymore. Half game out of a wild card spot. But I don't just have bucko fever. I got, like, bucko malaria. Like, you got to get me in a cold tub. You got to pump me full of pills. We got to bring this fever down. Talk me out of this, Doran. I am ready to get fooled again, man. I am fooling. This team's making the playoffs. They got the magic sauce. And we talked about this in the hallway just prior to the show. We can get as 30,000 feet as we want. We can zoom in as much as we want. It's our damn show. When Nick Gonzalez comes up and it's a big moment, don't we just assume Nick Gonzalez is going to come through? He did it again last night, and I wasn't surprised.
No.
He's just Mr. Clutch, dude.
Seriously. And yeah, like you just said, we were just talking about that, and I was like, you know what? I just feel like every time Nick Gonzalez gets to the plate, like, he's the most confident I feel at the plate right now. Andrew McCutchen as well. Like, I feel like he's going to get a hit. And I haven't felt that way about multiple players in a long time. Like, usually it's Brian Reynolds for a long time. It was Telez at some points. But, like, multiple players now, and Brian Reynolds being included in in Kutch and Gonzalez, I feel like that there are multiple players that I feel comfortable at the plate that they're going to get a hit, and especially in significant moments. And Nick Gonzalez is the leader of that, clearly. Like, he is a baseball player.
Yes, he is.
And I know that we have given him credit since he's been up, but it's definitely been overshadowed because he came up with Skeens. Now, he was, you know, the single reason why they were in a lot of games earlier whenever Skeens got brought up. I mean, obviously outside of Skeens, at the plate. Like, he has a lot to do with most of the success this year of the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he did slump a little bit, but he seemed to have got it back, and he is just a fantastic, fantastic baseball player. We were talking about him last year being up and he was the eighth pick of the draft, something like that, right in the middle, nine, eight, seven, one of
seven,
them.
Seven, I
top
think.
Top 10 pick, and he has just performed so much lately, and, you know, he's somebody that you can absolutely count on.
Yeah, we do the thing where, oh, the Pirates are this many games over 500 since Paul Skeens got called up, and, hey, it's just factual, but those guys got called up at the same time. And just hearing you talk, Dorn, about Nick Gonzalez there, it got my gears turning. Like, where would this team be? We can do the Skeens thing. We'll do the Skeens thing. He starts tonight. It's a Skeens day. Where would this team be without Nick Gonzalez, without Luis Ortiz?
Mm-hmm.
Two guys that coming into the season, I don't think anybody would have said, oh, the season hinges upon what those two guys are going to do. Nick Gonzalez did not make the club out of spring training. And when I was screaming and yelling when Bailey Falter was put in the rotation, and a lot of people were screaming and yelling, why not Luis Ortiz? They decided to go with Bailey Falter. And I don't know how you can say they were wrong, because Bailey Falter's been very good as well. However, Luis Ortiz, Jared Jones goes out. This guy has been every bit as good, different, but every bit as good as Jared Jones. Those are the two really unsung MVPs of the team. You can go Skeens, you can go Keller, you can go Brian Reynolds. But I don't think you got to go much further after that to say it could be Nick Gonzalez and Luis Dam Ortiz.
If they create the momentum that we think that they have right now, say they win today and they win the series against the Cardinals, and say they do the same things against the Diamondbacks, that is the series after this, I believe, right? The Diamondbacks. We have to point to the gem, and that's Luis Ortiz. Like, you have played this so perfectly against the Phillies and hopefully against the Cardinals. if you win today and you win the series, you would have played it so perfectly because you would hope to steal a game. Like you exhausted all your energy on Friday night against the Phillies. I mean, packed house. You know, it's a Phillies cross-state rivalry. They're the best team in baseball. We all know that. You come back and you give everything you got to win that game, and you're hoping like, Luis, all right, on Saturday, just give us something. Just keep us alive. And he did more than that. I feel like he is going to be the gem when we look back at these two series that gave them that momentum to hopefully get into the playoffs, that Luis Ortiz was really the staple of doing that.
It makes them look like geniuses, doesn't it?
It does.
Hey, we talked about it on Friday, that if they won the series against Philly, you'd feel like they got away with it. Like, they would be stealing it, because then things would set up for St. Louis. Like, we all felt good about the St. Louis series. Keller game one, yes. Skeens game two. But I know when we did our odds and ends on Friday, I did not feel good about that Philly series at all. And they wind up winning 2 out of 3. And they look like geniuses, but they can only look like geniuses because of just how well Luis Ortiz pitched in game number two. He was out freaking standing. And weirdly, Luis Ortiz has pitched more innings for this club than has Paul Skeens this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got an ERA under 3. He has been wonderful. Back to Nick Gonzalez for a second here. I was pulling up some numbers. Nick Gonzalez is hitting .263 on the season, which in today's newfangled baseball ain't so bad. He's hitting .293 with runners in scoring position. And in games that the Pirates lose, Nick Gonzalez is hitting .213. In games the Pirates have won with Nick Gonzalez in the starting lineup, he's hitting .300.
Mm.
He really is an engine
yes.
for them.
Yes.
Which is nuts to say. I would believe that if those numbers were O'Neill Cruz. Oh, when he hits .300, the Pirates win. When he hits .213, the Pirates lose. O'Neill Cruz, that makes sense. If it were Brian Reynolds, in wins he hits .300, in losses he hits .213, that would make sense. Those are your money players. Those are your big-time players. Those are your superstar-adjacent players. But isn't it nuts that Nick Gonzalez's numbers are that good in wins?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've almost expected now, especially lately, O'Neill Cruz is starting to become finally a constant. Brian Reynolds has really been a constant. When Nick Gonzalez hits, it's pretty simple. They win. When he doesn't, they lose because you need another bat or two to accentuate your two big dogs in the lineup.
He's delivered. The crazy thing is, too, and I just looked this up to make sure, like he's not a consistent, he doesn't have a consistent spot in the lineup either. Like, they move him around.
He's been hitting cleanup. They moved him all over the place.
They move him around. That's hard to do. It's hard to do to hit in different spots and just find consistency in different spots. And I'll give them credit for, feeling their way through that because, obviously, yesterday it panned out. And I believe on Friday he was hitting 5. Was he cleanup? I'll look at it again. But I believe on Friday he was in a different spot. So I give them credit. I give him credit. He was hitting 4 again there. So I think the last series and this series, but he's been hitting 5 and 6 at times too.
Absolutely.
And hitting. So that is a tough thing to do, and he's really come through for him.
And he and Cruz have turned into a really good double play combo.
Yes.
They had the double play the other night that was hit to Gonzalez, and off the bat, I didn't think he had to move to his left. I didn't think they had a chance to turn to, and it was a thing of beauty. And those guys have the mind melt. You said it already. Nick Gonzalez is just a baseball player, man.
And I asked Jordy Mercer yesterday about that communication, about that camaraderie you have to have with shortstop and second baseman. And, he broke it down, very, very well of just, just knowing your double play guy, just knowing him inside and out and having that communication. And it's nice to see those two young players doing that in the field and doing it at the plate,
yes.
too. And O'Neill Cruz, to go to him for a second, I mean, he's been stealing bases lately. He stole bases, and his sliding has gotten better.
Yes.
He has, and I know that there's errors. There's a few errors on Sunday that he had, and I think that those are things that we're gonna just have to live with for now until he does get at least 2 years underneath his belt of playing Major League Baseball. But right now, I think that he is on the verge, Crowley, of being that guy we've been trying to talk about.
I agree.
I think he's on that verge. I can just feel it.
When he hits a ball 100 and whatever miles an hour to the wall off a lefty, and you go, okay. And then in the ninth inning, the insurance runs, He goes oppo bomb into the bullpen off of one of the best lefty relievers in all of baseball. We know he crushes against righties. But for him to do it not just against lefties, but very good lefties.
Been working on it.
He's been working on it. They've put him out there more against lefties. And it's all coming together for O'Neill Cruz. I tweeted it out the other day. He looks primed to have an MVP kind of second half. And if he does, they're making the playoffs.
There's no doubt about it.
Right?
No doubt.
It's there, man. It's there. And you mentioned the stealing of bases. So the double steal on Friday. I'm sure you talked about it yesterday. Derek Shelton, man, kudos to you.
Yep.
But now we're seeing it. I wonder, Tomlin's Steelers have done this a lot, where at the bye week, they'll throw out stuff they're bad at. They'll accentuate stuff they're good at. They'll kind of pare it down. And we've seen them be different teams out of the bye week. I wonder if that week off for Derek Shelton, for the front office, if they sat down, all right, what do we need to do in the second half of the season? And I think they probably said, let's try to be more aggressive. Let's try to go first to third more. Let's do hit and run stuff. And let's steal more bases. They stole three more bases last night. Sawinski, Cruz, you mentioned with two. Cruz coming into the game had seven steals.
Right.
And I think part of that is maybe he's a little gun shy. Part of it is they probably want to protect him. He wasn't a great slider. You don't want him to get hurt. Well, you got 60 some odd games left. And if you can find a way to steal a run here and there because you're aggressive on the base paths, when your starting rotation, when your bullpen is coming to form, when you pitch as well as you do, stolen bases, things like that, two out hits, moving a runner over, those all add up when you've played now 33 one-score games. Now you're 18-15 in one-score games. Being aggressive is massive. We've seen it with the Reds. It's not a great hitting team. They lead the league in stolen bases, and the Pirates don't have as many guys who can do it. They don't have an Ellie De La Cruz. But if you're stealing two bases a game, three bases a game, turning singles into doubles, turning doubles into triples, you put the onus on the defense to make plays, and it has really been big for them coming out of the All-Star
break. Didn't Reynolds steal a base last night, too, I believe? I believe that he did, yes.
He did?
I think so.
I have Sawinski and Cruz.
Okay. I thought Reynolds did, but maybe I'm wrong. But they have guys that can do it. That's the thing. Like,
yes.
If you look up and down the order, they have guys that can. Even Telez moves pretty well for how big he is. The only one that, you know, guys that can are the catchers. But, you know, even if Taylor's in there, I mean, he can steal bases.
Absolutely.
They have guys that can do it. So if you want to play that type of ball, and that's a different type of ball, and you're, you know, in this half of the season, I think that you have to get aggressive because you can't fall behind. Like, every game is important. You got to go for it. You can't sit back and let the games come to you. You got to go and get these
go
runs,
take
man.
It. Go take it. Absolutely.
You have to.
And that's when we saw the Pirates get out to that 20-8 start last year, when the rule changes came to be and it was easier to steal bases and the bases are bigger and you can only throw over so many times. That was such a clear competitive advantage for the Pirates, and they seem to be on the cutting edge of all teams in Major League Baseball, and we didn't see it much after that last year.
Mm-hmm.
They were running wild.
Yep.
I'm not saying run wild. Be thoughtful about it, but be aggressive, and it looks like coming out of the break, I hope it's not just opponent-specific with the Phillies and their catcher's hand getting hurt or whatever they're seeing with the Cardinals. I'd like to see that the rest of the way because I think they, like you mentioned, have the guys to do it, and you don't need to score five runs a game. But can you get an extra run or two a series because you've been aggressive? It's going to go a long way. You can give us a ring, 412-928-9370. It's the Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. You can text us, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And you can tweet us, brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Up next, there is one bone I do have to pick with the Buccos. We shall do that. We want to hear from you. The Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Guardian Protection. Before we gripe about the Pirates, there's a lot of stuff we just talked about off the air that I'd like to bring up on the air, so we will do that over the course of the show. There's a lot more positive than negative going on with the Buccos. So I do want to gripe, but we didn't even mention Mitch in the first segment.
No.
He's such a constant, man.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had a little arm fatigue in the final start against the White Sox.
Yeah,
and I think, honestly, man, can we really question anything they've done from a pitching standpoint? I mean, honestly.
No.
Like, they have nailed it all season long. They've nailed it. I heard Pony bring this up with Greg Brown the other day. I listened to a lot of radio going back and forth between Uniontown and Pittsburgh. And I will agree wholeheartedly with Pony, and Brownie did too. They've nailed everything, even whenever you consider all the outcries for Bednar, and I was crying for it, to get moved from the closer's role when he was struggling. They stuck with him. Bailey Falter, that worked out. Jared Jones, being careful with him. I mean, I know he got banged up. Paul Skeen, like, you can't question what they've done. And so they pull Mitch after three innings, and it helped them win the White Sox game, because I don't know if he goes five or six if they win. Like, he just didn't have it.
Yep.
And it allowed him to have his velocity back up to like 97 miles an hour yesterday. The guy is a bleeping, I might swear today, Callis, just so you know, just be quick on the dump button. That guy's a flipping horse.
Yes, he is.
If unspectacular, fine, but he's just so dang good.
It has to be a mind game too. Like, I mean, just of thinking, you know, you're in the lineup yesterday and you have a guy that is just so consistent, he's just kind of chipping away at you, and that, you know, that's draining. And then you got to come back today and it's just a whole different animal. Oh my god, it's a whole different animal. It's like going against Freddy Krueger than going against Michael Myers. Like, it's you know, they both can get you a certain way. It's all going to be the same way.
But isn't that that's the beauty of it, man? That's well said by you, because again, Keller, it's just seven innings, only three strikeouts. I mean, he's a pretty good strikeout pitcher. He's not what he was last year striking dudes out. But that's fine, because he knows how to go deep in a ball game. And I think he's been very thoughtful, and they've been thoughtful with him. Hey, when you need the strikeout, you know you got that. But be efficient. And so he goes seven innings, 97 pitches. He's their horse. And on the broadcast yesterday, they brought it up. Like, you've got a great rotation, but you've only got one guy that you know bullpen's going to get most of the night off, and that's Keller. And so I don't want it to be lost just how great the season he's having is, because we see him butting up right against Paul Skeens, and he is so spectacular. 3.34 ERA, seven innings again last night, and again, it was just sort of a ho-hum kind of deal. But on the season now, he's up to 121 innings. He's on pace to be right around 200 innings again. And in a postseason, if they were, my God, to get there, Skeens, Keller, and then everything else sort of falls into place. But I wouldn't want to face that.
No.
If I'm any team in baseball. Mm-mm. And that's why you talked about it. They got away with that Philly series. They went 2 out of 3 without throwing their best two arms. So going into St. Louis, if they were going to finally take 2 out of 3, it sets up perfectly, and Keller got the job done last night.
Yep.
Brilliant. All right, now for my gripe. No, we've run out of time. I got two gripes with the Pirates, and we'll get to those coming up next. And I don't know that anybody can disagree, but we want to get it out there in the open. 412-928-9370 if you want to be part of the conversation. I forgot to mention this to start the show. But at the 50-minute mark of every hour, we're going to break down one of the positions on the offensive side for the Steelers. They officially report tomorrow. First real stuff starts on Thursday. So we'll do offense today, defense tomorrow. And instead of just going, okay, this guy could be pretty good, I wrote down some questions for every position unit, Doran.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw them
nice
in your direction. Like, so we'll do that coming up at about 6:48, 6:50, and we'll do it every hour. Fan Morning Show Twitter poll brought to you by PJ Fitzpatrick Home Improvement. Trust PJ.com. I don't want to do this, but I'm kind of going to do it. Like, who's a bigger unsung hero for the team, for the Pirates? Nick Gonzalez or Luis Ortiz? I mean, they're both massive for this team this year.
I think we're going to add a third in there by the end of the season.
Oh, I want to guess.
Go ahead, guess.
Rowdy.
No. I think that we're going to add a third, and they aren't going to make a move, and this guy's going to take it over.
Jack Sawinski.
Nope.
Oh, Joey Bart.
Nope.
Palacios?
Yes, sir.
Oh!
Yeah!
Yes, sir.
I said that yesterday. I love
that. He's going to be an unsung hero by the end of the season. He's going to do the little things, And as he's done, and he's going to be that kind of heart and soul of the team. Like, ever since they brought him, he just brings that energy. And you could just tell his energy is infectious to this team. That's a shot in the arm that they've needed. Like, think about since he's been up. What have they done since he's been up?
He's such an energy boost, man. He gives me Josh Harrison vibes.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
And I should have known which way you were going whenever you said if they don't add at the deadline, yeah, he'd get more playing time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he... There's just something about him and the energy, and the moment doesn't seem too big for him.
Kyle, if you could look and take a second, when did he come up? And I bet you that their record shows that he is a big part of that process of them winning.
He's
not because he's been in the lineup every day, but just because he's on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds crazy, but...
Sorry, he was recalled from AAA on July 4th. There you go.
Yeah.
And since the 8th... They're 9-2, I want to say. So, pretty good. And in this month, I think they're 11-5. So, yeah, I think you can't have enough of those guys to where, I mean, early in the season, man, they're scraping by with, well, Connor Joe, he's going to be our big-time pinch hitter. And if Palacios is the 26th man on your roster or the first guy up off the bench, if you want to even look at it that way, that's an improvement. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. Now, as for the gripes... Look, you got Skeens tonight. Things are going great. This is nitpicking. I would start Quinn Priester tomorrow instead of Martin Perez. Martin Perez has been a disaster.
Yeah, he hasn't been good.
He has not. They won in spite of him against the Phillies. Now, he's another guy who his off-the-field stuff is supposedly... Very good.
Big time leader.
He does the dumping of Gatorade and all that. There's a spot for him on the team. I'm not saying like DFA him or if they found a taker in a trade, okay. I'm not saying you kick the guy to the curb. He became a bullpen arm for the Rangers last year en route to the World Series. If he would take over the old Luis Ortiz role, I don't know if the results would be as good because Ortiz has been outstanding, but I've seen enough of him taking the ball every fifth day.
Yeah.
And Quinn Priester's last two appearances have been very good.
Yes. Let him ride that momentum, that confidence.
Yes.
I'm with you.
Yes. And if he bombs, okay, that's not great, but I want to give him the opportunity to show what he's got, and my assumption is, no offense, that Martin Perez is going to bomb. So where's the risk? I'd like to see Quinn Priester, and I know he came out of the bullpen the other day. So that's one gripe I would have with them. And then this isn't so much a gripe I have with the team, but Key Bryant Hayes is back to being no good again. He was getting hot. It felt like going into the All-Star break. Some guys need time. You know, Paul Skeens, you give him the rest. Mitch Keller needed the rest. Or O'Neill Cruz and Nehemi, Andrew McCutchen, he's got some lingering things. They all needed a break. Key Bryant Hayes would have benefited from playing every single day, I feel like. And we had talked about it kind of the opposite, like just give the back a couple of days. But he was swinging a hotter stick. He swings at the pitch 3-0 and grounds in double play. Last night, I saw a Pirates blogger tweet out, if Hayes doesn't ground into a double play, I think it would be a win. And then, of course, he grounds into the double play. He looks just totally lost.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nuts to think a guy that they're paying... And a team that still leaves a lot to be desired in their lineup and scoring runs is over 500, and he's really given them nothing offensively all year long. And I don't know what the solution is, because Jared Triolo hasn't been good, so you can't take him out and just have Triolo play every day. You're probably not going to be able to find a taker for him at the deadline, and if you did, you'd have to get a third baseman in return. Like, there's the McMahon guy for Colorado. You could do a flip, a change of scenery thing there. I don't know how realistic that is. I don't know what you do with him during the season. Like, he is absolutely a candidate to move this offseason. No doubt about that. But you're kind of, no offense, Key, you're kind of stuck with him the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So, it is a shame. Because I like the guy. And we've seen flashes. And he's a joy to watch defensively. And the hope was if he could be a 750 OPS guy with the way he plays defensively, he's well worth the contract, but he's not even close to
that. They'd be in first place.
Yeah.
If he was. If he just played to, and we say this all the time, if he just played to his average, they'd probably be pretty close to first place.
Yes. And most of the season, now when you think about it, they haven't gotten a ton of production from their corners. Mm-mm. They have for a month and a half now from Tellez, who's been a revelation. But on the flip side, Triolo and Key, they have not hit the ball at all. I can look it up, but I would imagine they're among the lowest in baseball.
Who's
OPS
better?
For third base? Who?
Who has a better OPS? Triolo or Key Brian Hayes?
It's gotta be Key, but I'm not.
I know.
I'm not convinced. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Like, it's pretty close. So, if you were to move on, like, I mean, at this point, if Triolo's higher, like, you'd just rather be stuck with him.
So, Key Brian Hayes' OPS is 596, and Triolo's is 555. So you asked the question, and I didn't know the answer immediately, and that tells you...
That tells you everything you need to know.
Everything you need to know. All right, coming up next, I'm going to ask Doran some questions about the Steelers' offensive line. That's where we'll begin. At the 48-50-minute mark of every hour, all show long, we'll be previewing the Steelers' offense just before they report to training camp. 50-minute mark on a fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Jeff Hathorne, our sports director, going to join us at the top of the 7 o'clock hour to get into the Bucks. But at the 50-minute mark of every hour today and tomorrow, we'll be breaking down a position unit for the Steelers as they report to St. Vincent College in Latrobe tomorrow for training camp. And we start with the Steelers' offensive line. And, Doran, I think one of the probably biggest not talked about a lot keys to the season is how they start running the football. Last 2 years, they finished strong running the ball. Can they start the season running the ball effectively when they have potentially a rookie starting at two of the spots? Or is it going to take time to gel and it might look like it has the last few years?
I think that they'll figure that out in training camp. I think they know what they want to do at the running back position, and that's why they'll run the ball well. And I think that the line that was there last year, and you're adding obviously two big pieces and two young pieces potentially at the right tackle spot and definitely at center, I think they'll be able to run the ball effectively at first because they will know what they're doing. They will know why they're running the ball. They'll know how they're running the ball. It'll make sense what the different blocks are, what the team blocks are, what the ace blocks are, and, you know, different run plays. And the running backs will understand the rhyme or reason of why they're running the football and where to go and the direction that they're headed in. So I think they will start off fast because Arthur Smith knows and will incorporate the offense to start fast because he understands how to run an offense.
Yes. Yes.
Not saying he's the best offensive coordinator in the world, but he is a legit offensive coordinator that knows. Yes. That knows how to run, that knows how to call plays.
Yes, and he's going to utilize guys you would think to their strengths, whereas the last guy wouldn't. And, yeah, they figured it out as the season went on. Their schedule in the back half is too hard for them not to make hay early. And if you're going to make hay early, the way that this team is built, you're going to have to run the ball effectively early. Can Zach Frazier hit the ground running?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it from day one, which is tomorrow. He will hit it'll be shaky for him at first, but I think he's just a guy that will come in here and it'll take, you know, a couple days and knock some rust off, but he'll be at the level of NFL play mentally and physically that he'll come in here and hit the ground running and then really take over. And you could just see him blossom. Watch him blossom throughout the season. You'll be like, oh my gosh, like look what he's doing now compared to what he was doing against the Falcons. Whenever they play, you know, when they start to get the division play, you'll see him start pointing and start IDing mics and doing things that he wasn't doing earlier in the season. I think he is a fantastic player, probably the best pick in the draft for the Steelers this year, and he'll absolutely hit the ground running.
And we've seen it, and I'm not comparing him to Maurkice Pouncey, but we have seen it before. Maurkice Pouncey came in day one, and, oh, okay, that guy's legit. Mm-hmm. You can do it. We saw it with Creed Humphrey. We've seen it with other guys. Come in, good from day one. Linderbaum quickly became one of the better centers in football. You can do it at that position. Last thing for you here on the Steelers' offensive line. Fatanu should just start at right tackle to begin the year, no?
Yes. Yes. Why'd you draft him in the first round?
Right.
I mean, he's a dog.
And he's not a project the way that Broderick Jones even was.
No. He did play, 40 games at left tackle. He only played a few games at right tackle. But I think he profiles as a right tackle. And I think that's where he's definitely best suited. And to him, football's football. Like, he's going to go out there and he's going to block. He's going to pass protect. And he's going to hold it down. So, yes, he is the guy.
Upon further review, I still didn't agree with it, but I understand why they didn't do it last year with Broderick Jones, because you had Myles Garrett, you had Bosa, you had Crosby, and you don't want a guy to be put on skates for his first three games of his NFL career. I still would have had Broderick Jones do it. You got to learn. Iron sharpens iron. Mm-hmm. You don't have that array of pass rushers in the first handful of games for Fautanu. So it's not like in the NFL it's ever easy, but he doesn't have to go up against the best of the best of the best of the best to start the season.
Yeah.
And again, he's not a project. And if they had drafted a guy like Amarius Mims, I think it would have been a different conversation.
Yes, probably Dan Moore would be starting.
Yes, you give him time, but just let Fautanu go, baby.
Yep.
Just let him go. There you go. Mm-hmm. We have previewed the Steelers' offensive line. Coming up at 7:48, I hope you don't take offense to this, Doran. I have mixed wide receivers and tight ends together. Just for time purposes.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We can maybe get into that segment a little earlier than 7:48.
Yeah, the tight ends deserve that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just was trying to figure out how to do offense tomorrow and defense, or offense today, defense tomorrow, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Or maybe the tight ends should just get their own segment.
Maybe we should just do a tight end show.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
All right, we got Jeff Hathorne coming up next, and we're going to talk to him, obviously, about what's going on with the Buccos. Paul Skeens on the mound today with an opportunity to take already the series against the St. Louis Cardinals. First, though, fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. It's the Chevy Summer Drive at Sun Chevrolet. Up to $7,500 in rebates, terms and conditions at sunchevy.com.